ask you to be in prayer for us.
Like some Sundays in the past, I'm on call, so if it rings, you'll know. Y'all just be in prayer for me at the time that I try to stand before you. I beg you to also be in prayer for my mother. She went and got a CT scan about 2 weeks ago. They found a spot on her lung. It's not cancer, so don't jump to that conclusion like I did. But it was pneumonia. Most of you have known that my mother has been quite sick over the last year, really. Some of y'all have seen her at events and different things, and you come tell me, well, your mother doesn't look good. Yes, I know. I got it. And I've tried to get her to go to a doctor and to a specialist, tried back in January. Some of y'all know that. Some of y'all do not. But she finally went to a specialist. Yes, she has pneumonia, and I think Dad has put her on rules. I don't know what that means, that some of you older men may know. I don't. But I called and said, you know, to check up on her this weekend to make sure she wasn't doing anything. That's hard for her. Some of y'all may know that. It's hard for that woman to sit down and rest. But I tell you one thing, we can learn something from that. Sometimes we just need to rest. We don't need to be picking up grandbabies. We don't need to be cleaning the house with, what's the word I'm looking for, ammonia in the air with all those chemicals running around. We don't need to be breathing those in. And she's convinced that that's how she got it. But, you know, I don't know. Taylor, I'll defer to you. The subject that I have on my mind this morning is something I've been thinking about most this week. The meeting last week was great. If you missed it last weekend at Zion Rest, I tell you, you just missed some good times. Brother Silas was greatly blessed, and I just really enjoyed being in the presence of him, hearing his messages that he spoke of. The thoughts that he presented last week will not be something that I'll soon forget. It's messages like those last weekend that stick with you for a really long time. And so I hate that you all missed it, but they'll be online, so take a listen if you get a chance. What's on my mind this morning is when God shows up, he shows out. My dad actually he called me one time about 4 or 5 months ago and says, hey, I preached a sermon. He says, when God shows out, you know, when God shows up, he shows out. And I said, that's really cool. And I thought it was real neat kind of headline. I didn't ever listen to the sermon. I thought I should have. And I regret not doing so. But I thought to myself, maybe what would I say about something similar? And I think a lot of times today, God's people get discouraged because they don't see God actively working in their lives. They don't see God, you know, when bad things happen. Sister Allison, I thought about you this week. When we have bad things that happen in our lives, sicknesses may come over us, or an illness, or accidents may happen. Maybe, says Sister Haley, a death to a friend. We don't necessarily understand those things readily. And sometimes we get discouraged because we don't see God interacting with us today as he did in the Old Testament. And hopefully this morning I will bring to light some of those things that when God shows up, he does show out. And some of the very stories that we have, or history that we have in the Bible, God was not trying to appease the children of Israel. He was not showing up to show them how great they are and how great he loved them. A majority of the time, he showed up just to show his magnificent and awesome power. That's all that he was trying to do, was to show to them that I'm God and what I say goes. And a lot of times, we as God's children have a hard time believing that today. We have a hard time recognizing that, and I'll start out this way. I was talking to a man this week, and he told me he'd recently started going back to church, and he was really enjoying it, and he told me that while he was going to church that he just really enjoyed the message. And I said, well, please entertain me for a moment. You know, what did he say? You know, I want to see how well he remembered what he heard. What did he say? Well, he just said that the preacher made him feel really good. And I got to thinking about that for a little bit. The preaching of the gospel is not always there to make you feel good. He mentioned some things to me in the conversation, and I got to thinking, the majority of the times, like even though the scriptures do comfort me, but the scriptures a lot of time tell me where I'm doing something wrong, where I'm doing something bad. And it doesn't bring me a lot of comfort to have my sin brought to the forefront of my face. But yet this man was just overwhelmed with the fact that the message that this guy just made him feel good. And I said, but wouldn't you rather know who the God of the Bible is? And he said, not really. He says, I'd rather just hear whatever makes me feel good and think about it however I want to think about it. And so I asked him I was trying to be very polite. I hope y'all know this. I said, so you would rather worship a God in which you can define and idolize for whatever makes you feel good? In other words, you would rather just worship yourself. And he did not get offended by that, but he thought about it, and, well, you know, I just want to feel good. That's okay, we'll end the discussion there. And so the rest of the week, all I could think about is the God of the Bible. Who is the God of the Bible? Well, the God of the Bible is someone who saw the world in disarray, and early on in Genesis chapter 3 or 4, we'll read over there, maybe 4, 5, and 6, we'll read over there, where Noah found grace in the eyes of God, and what did he do there? He decided that he commissioned Noah to build an ark, and in building that ark, he told Noah that I'm going to destroy this earth, and only 8 people, your family, is going to be the survivors of this flood that's going to come. And I tell you, I would have loved to have been there at the time of Noah to actually witness that myself, because could you imagine being Noah? Could you imagine Noah? You know, rain? What's rain? It hasn't rained on the... What are you talking about? What's going to happen? A flood? What's a flood? An ark? What are you telling me to build you here? And yet, in 40 days and 40 nights of rain, he destroyed every single thing that was left on the earth. Can you imagine that? And somebody would say, well, that doesn't seem fair. Why would God do that? Well, if you can't believe that God destroyed the earth with a flood and saved 8 survivors through an ark and through his blessing upon them, then you can't believe the rest of the God of the Bible. You can't even really believe the first 2 chapters where God created the heavens and the earth. You can't believe that when he spoke into existence this earth, that it came about exactly how he commanded it. But over in Exodus chapter 7, we'll read of some things. Some things we'll say, you know, when we try to think about our God, some people will say, well, Pharaoh hardened his heart against the children of Israel. Pharaoh did not harden his heart. God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Why did God harden Pharaoh's heart? We'll read here in chapter 7, verse 3. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt. But Pharaoh shall not hearken unto you, that I may lay my hand upon Egypt and bring forth mine armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments. Those 10 plagues that were there in that follow after this Exodus chapter 7 were going to come. And they were going to come by God's power, because he wanted to show not only the Egyptians in that day who God was, but he wanted to show the children of Israel who could deliver them out of the hand of Pharaoh and take them to a place called Canaan. He wanted to show it by his own power and by his own might. And I tell you, folks, today in this world that we live in today, God can work in your life. And we're going to get to a New Testament example here in just a little bit, and hopefully it will be a blessing unto you. But I want to talk just for a little bit about some of these things. Think about the 10 plagues that came. First was the plague of blood. The river there, the Nile River, and all the ponds and all the waterways and all the little streams that were there, the Lord told Moses and Aaron to take the rod and to dip it into the water, and it would turn his blood. Now, the magicians of that day, the magicians were skeptics. The Pharaoh's magicians would come along and say, oh, ooh. They throw a little magic, a little, probably some sort of dye or something they had in that day. And they said, look, we can turn water into blood too. And then came the frogs. After what happened with the frogs, the Lord sent frogs among the land of Egypt. And they called them out of the sea. And what did the magicians of Pharaoh do in that time? They also called frogs up out of the sea. But when it came to lice, the magicians could not do that. And it says, and the magicians did so with their enchantments to bring forth lice, but they could not. So there were lice upon man and upon beast. Now, I'll tell you, where's Sister Lois in this? She remembers the year of singing school and the lice. She remembers that. We all remember that. I tell you, I don't want that plague upon anybody in this place. But in that day, the Lord sent lice among the people there. He sent blood first. He sent frogs. He sent lice. Then he sent flies. All the time, he kept hardening Pharaoh's heart every single time. Pharaoh by himself, I think, was willing to let the people go, but the Lord continued to harden Pharaoh's heart against the people there to show his power through the land, to show his power to the Egyptians, to show his power to his children, to the children of Israel. He also sent a disease upon the beast where all the cattle died. He sent boils. He sent hail, and he also sent locust. And he also sent darkness. And the last plague we know very well, where he ordered that everyone that did not put the blood upon the door panels on the top and the side of the panels of their house, that every firstborn among the land of Egypt would die. And those that had the blood on the doorpost, he would pass over. And it would be eventually a memorial to us that we still keep today. Part of the Passover, we still keep a portion of that. We don't partake of the lamb and the bitter herbs anymore, but we still do something, a little piece of it that they did even in that day. So finally, the Egyptians come out after the 10th plague. Pharaoh lets them go, but he really doesn't let them go. He then chases after them, and then they come to a Red Sea. Now, my dad and several others that I think are going on another trip with them next year in 2019, they're going back over to Israel, and they're going to go down to where the crossing of the Red Sea occurred. According to, everybody kind of has skeptics of where that actually crossed, but they're going to go down to the Red Sea. That's all I know. And could you imagine coming and having Pharaoh's armies chasing you, and you come to a sea, and there's no way to cross? There's no way to cross it. And yet, Moses was instructed in that day. He says, "Fear ye not," verse 13 of Exodus 14. "Fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians who ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace." And that day, Moses took his rod and he stuck it in the middle of the Red Sea, and the walls were parted thereby. And I'm telling you, even in the movie Bruce Almighty, where he parts the tomato soup, you remember that? If any of y'all ever seen it? That's a nice little picture. I felt like they were making fun of the whole idea, and I kind of don't really like the movie in and of itself. But to be a child of God, to be an Israelite in that day where I'm standing at the Red Sea, and he parts the Red Sea. Now, here in a couple weeks, me and Sammy are going down to the beach. And I watch the waves crash and come and crash and come. And it doesn't matter what kind of barriers I may build up or do anything. That sand is just as wet as it's going to be, and it's going to stay wet, and there's no way I can dry it. But in an instant, in that day, the walls of that sea, the waters of that sea were parted, and they walked on dry land. And that still blows my mind away. And you say, "Well, Brother Derek, those are nice stories. Those are nice historical records." I don't see any of that today. You may not see any miracles in that way, but we still see miracles of God today. And you're saying, "Well, I don't see them very much." I ask you, are you looking for them? Are you praying for them? Is God working in your life? Because He is. He can work in your life because He's powerful. He is so powerful that all these things that I've read to you, they actually happen. And not only these things that happen, things happen in Numbers chapter 11. We'll just kind of carry through and kind of paraphrase some of this today. In Numbers chapter 11, the children of Israel were extremely upset and dissatisfied with Moses and Aaron. So what did they do? They came and murmured against them and said, "You've brought us out to this wilderness, and now we're sitting here, we're starving. We remember the cucumbers and the melons that we did eat in Egypt's land, and guess what? We want meat. We're tired of this. We want meat." And again, God wanting to show His power says, "That's all right. I'll give you meat, and I'm going to give you all the meat you can eat." He sent quail among them, so much quail that it was, let's see if I can read it real quick, in Numbers chapter 11. My pages don't stick together too long. In Numbers chapter 11, well, it'd help if I wasn't in Leviticus. There we go. Numbers chapter 11, verse 31. And there went forth a wind from the Lord and brought quails from the sea and let them fall by the camp, as it were a day's journey on this side and as it were a day's journey on the other side, round about the camp, as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. But it was so much quail that he sent a plague among them, so much that it came out of their nostrils. And that's how much quail they had to eat that day. In Numbers 16, we have another story where again, God wanted to show his mighty power, where Korah and all of his camp and all of his family, like I think 250 of them, came to Moses and to Aaron and said, "You take too much upon you, or who are you to elevate yourself to be ruler among this people?" And so Korah was really trying to basically say, "Who are you, Moses and Aaron? Why do you get to tell us what to do?" And Moses actually bowed his head and prayed and told Korah, in Numbers 16, we'll read just a couple of verses. And Moses said unto Korah, verse 8, "Hear, I pray you, ye sons of Levi, seemeth it but a small thing unto you that God of Israel hath separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them. And he hath brought thee near to him and all thy brethren, the sons of Levi, with thee. And seek ye the priesthood also." In other words, why are you seeking also the priesthood of this? Why are you trying to elevate yourself even more? So what did God do? We know the story. Verse 32. He told the camp of Korah to go out and to burn incense. Burn incense in their camps. And for them to be gathered together into one place. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up and their houses and all the men that appertained unto Korah and all their goods. They and all that appertained to them went down alive to the pit, and the earth closed them up, and they perished from among the congregation. And all Israel that were around them fled at the cry of them, for they said, "Lest the earth swallow us up also." And there came out a fire from the Lord and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. He didn't do that just as punishment to Korah. It was a continuous showing of his power unto the children of Israel. What do? We turn over to 1 Kings 18, where Elijah was battling with Ahab. And of course, Ahab was offering up sacrifices under their god Baal. And of course, Elijah in his day decided that he would challenge them. And so what did he do? He says, "All right, you make a sacrifice and I make a sacrifice. And we're going to sit there and we're going to have both of our sacrifices, and you're going to call out to your God, and I'm going to call out to my God, and we'll see whose God is God, really. We'll see who the real God is. Is it Baal or is it God? Our God, God of Jacob. And of course, and it came to pass, verse 27, it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, "Cry aloud, for he is a God. Either he's talking, or is he pursuing, or is he in a journey or peradventure? Maybe he sleeps and must be awaked." And he cried, and they cut themselves after the manner with knives and lancets till the blood gushed upon them. And it came to pass that when the midday was past and they prophesied until the time of the offering and the evening sacrifice, there was neither a voice nor any answer nor any that regarded. I'll tell you, when we call upon our God, I mean, this goes to so many things that I would love to share with you today and trying to wrap your mind around how powerful our God is. When you pray, how do you pray? How do you pray? I want you to know that. How do you pray? But see, me and Brother Sam, Brother Josh, we come here before you and we preach to you and we talk about having a hope. But that hope's not a wish. I don't go, when I bow my head and pray at night, praying for my wife, praying for my son, praying for the deliverance on my drive every morning to work and every day when I come home so that I can be with them, I don't pray thinking maybe, possibly God's going to help me today. I pray knowing, because I have a blessed assurance in my God. I have a confidence in my God because I know the God of the Bible. I know that he can deliver me, and I know that he can deliver you. Now, I mean, it's such an assurance unto me. We sing songs, "Blessed Assurance." What? Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine. We sing those songs, so I ask you, do they mean anything to you? Because I'm talking to my friend, and he wants to worship a God that makes him feel good. I told him I just want to worship the God of the Bible because I want to know what he is capable of. He may, and I'm telling you, friends, Whether he loves you, or, well, I'm sorry, whether he was blessing you at this time or whether he's judging you at this time, he's still righteous in his judgment. He's still just and holy in everything that he does. Some days I do well, and some days I do bad, and some days I feel like his wrath is being poured out on me in just a small little way. But you know what? He's still just. He's still righteous, and he's still on his throne, making intercession for you and me because we have an advocate with the Father. And our advocate is up there saying, I know he messed up, but I died for that one too. And I died for those yesterday, and I died for those tomorrow that he doesn't even know he's going to do yet, but I know he's going to do them because our advocate is there mediating for you and me each and every day that we live. So that's the God that I call upon, and Elijah called upon that very God. He called upon him when he rebuilt the altar. He put 12 stones there around to represent the children of Israel. And then he put the wood for the burnt offering there. And then he poured barrels and barrels and barrels of water to one time, two times, and three times till it filled up like a trench. And then he called upon the God of heaven. He called upon our God, the same God that we worship today, to deliver him in that day to show Ahab and all of the ones that were worshiping Baal who God really was. And what happened? I love the way it kind of sums up here. And the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice and the wood and the stones and the dust. And I like this. It licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces. And they said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. I tell you, we have more stories. I tell you, I've been near fire most of my life, and every time I've been caught in the fire, I've gotten burned. I have a green egg at home, and I still can't manage to fire that thing up without burning the hair off my arm. And I don't know how it happens, but every time I get near it, I burn the hair off my arm. I've even burned it on the gas stove. Still can't believe Sammy lets me cook. And when you read over in Daniel chapter 3, just before King Nebuchadnezzar is basically judged and punished for raising himself up in pride, we have a story there where three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were cast into a fiery furnace. But you know what? They spent there all day and all night. And when they came the next morning and they opened the doors, not a single hair on their head was burned. Not a single flesh was even crisp. But they were delivered from that furnace, and there was a fourth there that day that was in the image of the Son of God. Just as Daniel was delivered from the lion's den, where the Lord shut the mouths of the lions that night, and the king come down and just basically apologizing to Daniel. And they and of course Daniel said, my God has shut their mouths. And so they delivered Daniel out of the pit, and everyone that falsely accused Daniel was then cast into the pit, and they were immediately devoured. And it says their bones were broken, and they did consume them. Our God has, when he shows up, he shows out. I can't imagine when I couldn't imagine being in the presence of a lion and him just sitting there staring at me, unable to open his mouth. I saw a video the other day on Instagram where this guy had his back to the lion cage and this lion was like kind of crouching upon him like that. And as soon as he turned around, the lion jumped and hit the glass and knocked him back. But that's the way lions work. But in this day, the lion's mouths were shut. So let's grab one New Testament example, and I'll close with this. In Luke chapter 8, we read over a story where Jesus and his disciples entered into a ship. Now again, in every story that I've mentioned to you this morning, God was trying to show his power. He was trying to show his power to Ahab and Elijah in that day. He was trying to show his power to King Nebuchadnezzar in that day. And in this day time, he's also again trying to show his power unto his disciples. Now, the story that I'm about to read to you, you've heard it preached. The Lord can calm the seas and the storms of your life. The Lord can, you know, just when things are troubling, going wrong, he can come up and just say, peace, be still. And while that's a good message, and while that is also true, that's not the story and the account that's going on here in this text. In Luke chapter 8, we read, now it came to pass on a certain day that he went to a ship with his disciples, and he said unto them, let's go over to the other side. Let us go over to the other side. Do you think for a single moment that Jesus had any doubt in his mind that he was going to the other side? Do you have any doubt in his mind, in your mind, when Jesus said, I'm going to the other side, let us go to the other side, that somehow they would never make it to the other side? Surely that would be foolish to say yes. And they launched forth, and they sailed, and he fell asleep, and there came a storm of wind on the lake, and they were filled with water and were in jeopardy. This is verse 22 through verse 25 of Luke 8. And they came unto him, awoke him, saying, Master, Master, we perish. I think Matthew and Mark have different accounts. One says, carest not that we perish. Then he arose and rebuked the wind and the raging of the water, and they ceased, and there was a calm. I think Mark records for us that he stood and said, Peace, be still. Now, me and Sammy went to the Keys about a year ago, and when I was out there at the Keys, we were in this little itty-bitty boat, and the sea was very calm, but if the sea started rocking a little bit, I'm talking about just like 3 foot little choppy waves, 3 and 4 foot little choppy waves, I wanted to get off the boat. I was done. My stomach started to churn. I was done. And all I could think about was this text about, and honestly, I'm sitting there hoping the Lord would just calm the sea in that moment. But I tell you, in this context of this scripture, he looks at his disciples and says, Where is your faith? Where is your faith? And again, when he rebuked it, they would ask the question, what manner of man is this? Even though sometimes we enjoy the story about how the Lord can calm the seas of your life, I'm telling you, he took one more opportunity to show his power, and they would ask him the very question, what manner of man is this that even the winds and the waves obey his command? If our Lord can do all of this, all these, you know, you say, well, Brother Derek, those are nice stories. Those are nice historical records. I don't see any of that happen today. I'll tell you, God's just as powerful. He is unchanging. I am the Lord and I change not, as Malachi records for us. He can work just as hard in your life today and in this church's life and in our family's life, just as he did in that day. I am waiting for the days when the Lord puts out my fire, when the Lord shows his power in my life. And he's done it in many different ways. Remember who we pray to. Remember who we call upon when we have friends. As Brother Sam was mentioning, reading off all the ones that were sick and afflicted, and maybe those that are nigh unto death. Who are you calling on? I'm calling upon the God of heaven. I'm calling upon the God of Abraham and the God of Jacob that did all those things, and he can still do them today. May the Lord bless you.